Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, creating a community where Black and queer folks are fearless in thought and curious at heart. I'm one of your hosts, Jordan, and today, Tony DeMond and I are discussing the queer experience on HBCU campuses. Are HBCUs doing enough to meet the unique needs of their queer students? What type of campus experience do we wish to see for the next generation of queer and Black students? This is School Gaze.
School Gaze.
School Gaze.
I think that's what we were, right? School Gaze.
I think you were. I was, you know, working on it. I was a baby gay.
Yeah.
Baby gay.
I was definitely a school gay.
The people didn't know, but you were a school gay.
Yeah, you
we were. They knew about you too, girl.
I never said they didn't, baby.
So I was right from the start. School Gaze, the three of us.
Yes.
Got it.
And so for those who didn't catch the reference, it's actually a nod to the Spike Lee film, School Days. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
If you didn't catch the reference, you're piss poor.
Yeah,
I mean,
School Days is an incredible movie.
It really is. I mean, it's like, I don't even know if it's still on Netflix anymore, but I know the day that it went on Netflix, I was just like, I have to watch this.
I'm about to say I love School Days.
Yeah. All right, so I want to get into a game, right? So the three of us, we started our Howard University experience 15 years ago.
Whew. Okay, I'm gagging.
All right, so I want to time travel back to those years.
Girl.
For a game of for a game of this or that.
All right, let's see. What do we got?
What performance are you paying closer attention to at a football game? The cheerleaders or the majorettes?
The majorettes.
Like ooh la la?
Like ooh la la.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh la la.
Yeah. Well,
though my friends were cheerleaders.
Okay, well.
But you maybe.
I think I like the majorette moment, the dramatics of it all.
Yeah. I mean, I just love, like, it was the first time that I seen that before. Like, I was familiar with cheerleaders before college, but, like, getting to Howard, I was like,
yeah, but you know, Black college
happening?
Cheerleaders cheer very differently.
They do.
Oh, absolutely.
They do. They do. Remember when our friend Corey taught us like that majorette choreography at your house?
A whole eight count.
Going off. I felt like a bad bitch.
It was so fun.
It was really fun.
It was fun. You know, I love a sickening eight count.
Hello. And we all caught it. And it was amazing. The ripple was everything. All right. You can only attend one homecoming event, the step show or the fashion show?
Step show.
Oh, the step show was the one, not the two. You know, the step show was like main event, attraction.
You step in the step show?
I did not, but my little brothers did, and we won the Res Fest step competition.
You got like stepping for the dorm rooms, like
right?
All the different dorms,
stepping. Yeah. You got to as part of like your winning and your bragging rights, you get to perform at the Howard step show, which was
a big deal. There are old videos of Tony stepping on YouTube.
If you search
hard enough, me and Will found one.
Mm-hmm.
Tony doing Get Back.
The year was 2008.
That one,
yeah. I was step master.
You were,
yeah.
I am
step show, right?
Listen, I perform. I've been stepping since seventh grade, so
I've been stepping since I was four.
Yes,
baby. You should step on TikTok.
That would be fun.
All right, you have to choose one sorority to pledge. AKA or Delta.
That
really take you out, DeMond?
That killed me.
Bust you up.
Well, it sounds like you got an answer.
I don't have an answer.
You don't have an answer?
I'm discreet.
You don't
boom. Check that.
Oh, you're still a prospect.
Discretion is key.
Oh, is that the answer for both of y'all?
No, I don't know because I have traits of both. And I think I've gone through phases of like, I may have been a Delta at one point.
Okay.
And when we were freshmen, the Deltas were running campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I idolized them. But then like the AKAs and the sassiness and the prettiness and all, you know, all the antics, the girly part, like the femininity of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I exemplify that too. So it would be really hard for me to choose. It'd be a game time decision.
Got it. So the game time is now.
The game time is now. And I say right now, I might be an old nasty, sickening AKA.
Okay, I can see that. DeMond?
discretion, girl.
Oh, discretion. Okay, well, I pick AKA.
Damon's with us. He just don't want to say it.
The first time I saw those 100 plus women walking around campus in a single file line, I was just like, this is theater.
You know what's funny? Our freshman year in 08, I happened to be walking across the yard when the AKAs turned 100.
Oh, right. That did happen. Yes, on they would just
oh, come my in. Goodness. That whole day, all you heard was, good morning. It's all right.
They had it a was... huge moment when we were on campus.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. All right. So, what bottle were you most likely to bring to a house party? Ugh. Bacardi or Moscato? And be honest.
At the time, it was Bacardi for me. I remember drinking rum.
Probably Moscato, because the Bacardi always made me sick.
Rum I had the Bacardi, Bacardi Peach, I think it was.
Oh, throw up.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then Bacardi, like, that was that gold one?
It tastes like Bacardi Limon? Bacardi
no, Limon? It's like...
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Bacardi Gold.
Yeah.
The brown, like, the... Yeah. Oh, mm-mm.
It tastes like tears.
We did Dragonberry.
From a PWI. Oh,
still nasty.
It was
gross.
It was actually disgusting, but you know, we did it. I was bringing Bacardi as
like
well.
Strawberry plastic.
All right. So, before Grindr and Jacked, there was Black Gay Chat and Adam for Adam.
Which I was like, Black Gay Chat? Oh, girl.
BGC.
Okay. Right. Okay. I knew what you meant, but it took me a second. It went right over.
Well, I'm sure it did.
Yeah, now it's back.
Which one did you use more often?
BGC. What was the other one?
Adam for Adam.
Oh, BGC.
I remember Adam. I didn't really use either of them, though.
No?
Mm-mm. You didn't have any accounts?
Right. Like the
may so. Or may not have.
Maybe, but like nothing like active enough for me to have a fond or important memory.
Okay. All right. He's just like less. I was out in these streets in person.
Yeah.
Hello. All right. Lastly, which song gets the stronger reaction from you? Nuck If You Buck or Swag Surfing?
I knew you were going to say Nuck If You Buck. But for me, Swag Surf.
I'm going to go with Swag Surf.
Yeah. That's the one that I would get hyped for. You get around with, you know, your yeah. friends and y'all all giving. And then back then, like, that's when it was new.
Hello, innovators. Innovators. We created the Swag Surf at HBCUs.
Right,
our generation.
Swag Surf has been like added to that canon of HBCU stuff.
Uh huh.
It makes mm-hmm. me very proud. I'm like, oh, we have a thing.
We do.
Absolutely.
Who knew it was gonna be that?
So I think this will be a good time to bring on our guests today. We have a myriad of experiences and folks that are joining us today, and. Today's episode is called School Gays, as Jordan mentioned earlier, and it's kind of a reference to the movie School Days, and it's like the 34th anniversary of the movie.
This February, yeah.
Right, so it's a big deal, and it's actually aligned to when we're doing this episode. But School Gays for good reason, because in the movie, Lawrence Fishburne's character, Dap, mm-hmm. is a campus activist who aims to rally the student body to join his pro-black movement. Meanwhile, he dabbles in homophobia.
Right.
So, and he repeatedly refers to men's fraternities as fags, proving that even the people who are fighting for equality in HBCUs draw the line at queerness. Mm-hmm. And so today we have a couple of educators and as well as a few queer youth to help us really examine how the Black queer HBCU experience has evolved over time. So first, we have Kirsten Bird, who's a private tutor who had the pleasure of attending not one, but two HBCUs, and that's Spelman College and Hampton University. And her studies include a focus on LGBTQ student experiences at HBCUs, which is exactly what we're here to talk about. So we're very excited about having her here today. Next, we have Steve Mobley, who's an assistant professor of higher education administration at the University of Alabama. He is a fellow Howard alum. We love to see it. We love to see it. And he's done a ton of work around the role of HBCUs in addressing the unique needs of LGBTQ plus students. We also have Jawan Durbin, a Morehouse graduate, activist, and community organizer. And he's the first openly gay person to hold the title of Mr. HBCU 2019-2020. So we're going to get into that a little bit later. Then we have Malay Simmons, who's a transgender HBCU queen And we mean that literally because she's also snatched several crowns on the royal court. And she's also an LGBTQ motivational speaker and currently a senior at Johnson C. Smith University. And finally, we have Janelle Green, who's a public administration graduate student and Florida A&M University alum who has previous experience in the human rights campaign and specifically in their HBCU program and a passion for informing students of LGBTQ history, equality, and inclusion. So that was a mouthful, but today we are really excited to welcome you all to our Surface Level family.
Yes, welcome.
Welcome, everyone. So we're going to start with the educators. So we're going to start with Kirsten and Steve. And one question that we ask everyone when they come on our show and for everyone that's going to be in the later segment, think about it now. We always ask, what are you curious about? So Steve, let's start with you. What are you curious about?
Today, I would say I'm curious about this Janet Jackson documentary that's coming out at the end of the month.
Ooh, very same. Excited. Yes.
That is what I'm curious and excited about.
Big Janet Jackson fans here right. at Surface Level.
And Kirsten, how about you?
Well, I'm curious about the lived-in developmental journey. I guess from a research perspective, understanding the closet using intersubjectivity, which is bridging the personal isolated experience with the collective experience of HBCU homophobia, how do you bring individual students out of their individual closet? And finally, I'm curious about the role of educating others, preparing and finding facts for the, you know, inevitable conversations and debates with possibly homophobic people. This process builds confidence, gives them the words for their journey, where they'll often have to, you know, we have to often negotiate coming out to people in different settings.
And this is why we have educators, because they expand our minds.
Yes.
You know, it's definitely some food for thought there.
So Kirsten, let's stay on you for a moment. So you've alluded to some of your research, but what do you see are some of the biggest needs for queer students at HBCU campuses today, and how are HBCUs either meeting or not meeting those needs currently?
First and foremost, are key for all college students, PWIs, HBCUs, everywhere. So that's important. A positive response to their disclosure of their sexual orientation helps with a healthier mental and social development. Rejection can lead to an extended stay in the closet with its damages as well. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Thank you. And Steve, let's talk to you for a bit. So through your exploration, what are some strategies that HBCUs can do to ensure that Black and queer students persist and graduate? I think part of the discussion we've had around HBCUs is around graduation rates. And those of queer students are typically even lower. So what are some things you think we could be doing there?
There is so much that I can say about that question right there. So I'll begin with this. I have begun rejecting very recently that this is a new phenomenon, right? Mm. Black, queer, and trans folks have led, graduated, and attended our schools since their inceptions. Mm-hmm. And I can run a roll call. You have Lucy Dixlow, you have Bayard Rustin, you have Elaine Locke, you have Langston Hughes, you have Andre Leon Talley, rest in peace, right? You have, I can go on and on, right? Mm-hmm. I think that when we talk about this topic, people want to make it a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not a new thing. When I'm thinking about what can our schools do and what they are doing, I want to flip that question really quickly, because I think it could be very deficit laden. We could think about, oh, these HBCUs are not doing enough, right? Whenever I am in the presence of senior HBCU student, HBCU leadership, just period, they're like, well, what are PWIs doing? I'm like, we're not worried about them. Let's look at what's happening amongst our HBCUs. There's a whole Morehouse with the prep program, right? Mm. There are 6 LGBT student centers right now amongst our HBCUs. You have Johnson C. Smith, where Malay is, where they are present and they table at queer college fairs. Mm. They hosted the town hall for the Black Gay Pride in Charlotte, right? Mm-hmm. These schools are painted and Black folks, period, as being more homophobic than anybody else, where there are some pivotal things that are happening at our schools. Are they doing everything right? Hell no, right? But there are some amazing things that are happening at our schools. And mm-hmm. I actually published a paper recently where I have developed a model of practice from recruitment to graduation and how we can better retain our students, right? How are we engaging our students in recruitment? Mm-hmm. We're your queer and trans folks and giving these college tours, right? Mm-hmm. And even your alumni base, right? Not to ring the Howard bell, but how powerful is it that there's a Lavender Fund that is directly positioned to your queer and trans alumni at our school? Mm-hmm. I don't know about y'all, but that's when I felt that my school liked me and loved mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
Like, that powerful for me. So I'll get off my soapbox really quickly, but yes.
No, thank you. I think it's important to say that. I think we too often think about what's going wrong. And there are a lot of places that, to your point, in our own communities, we can look to as guiding lights and look to as places for growth and hopefully do a little better, child. Mm-hmm. So the next question is for both of you. And I think it's unique that you've spent time at HBCUs and then you've also done a lot of research and educational work also in the same field. So from your time as a student until now, what are some of the ways that you've seen queer people grow on campuses? Kirsten, let's go back to you.
First, where I didn't see growth, the cycle of from my undergrad years to the time of my dissertation, the cycle of queer student organizations is dying off once the leaders graduate in that whole cycle. So I think that's where, you know, we need to have more growth, like making these college groups more stable and more consistent. But as far as growth, research is accumulating a lot about Black queer experiences, Black queer culture is evolving, going mainstream with RuPaul, the Post series, with Billy Porter, Lil Nas X, those things. A lot of growth, pronouns, thinking about their identities and bringing that out of themselves. You know, how do I define my own identity, which is important, which people haven't always had options like we do today, especially with pronouns, and how that's like a good gateway to get people like thinking about identity. Another positive that I've seen the most growth in the fact that queer and closeted HBCU students, despite the homophobic climates, can actually find resources, a history, or some part of the culture that they can hold on to in spite of the pervading homophobia. So I think that's important.
Thank you. And Steve?
So I'm going to date myself quite a bit. when I was at Howard from 01 to 05, there was the Greg Love incident in Morehouse where he was beat mm-hmm. for a presumption of being gay. My classmate was bashed by the band. My senior year, J.L. King was invited to campus to discuss that book, The Down Low, and it became like a witch hunt. Well, who's gay, right, at Howard? And I put a lot of those things into a closet because I wasn't out when I was at Howard. Like, that's very fascinating. Whenever I visit HBCU, like, well, how are you at Howard? And I was like, well, I was hiding in plain sight, right? Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to ascend a certain social hierarchy, right? I wanted to be on Power Hall. I wanted all of these things. But when I think about the growth that I think HBCUs have done, I was in a class one time and I told a classmate, there will never be an LGBT student center at HBCU in my life. And now we have 6. Wow. I have never been so glad to be so wrong, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that I can even get my work published about this, I have HBCU presidents who are calling me and are like, we need help. I never could have imagined. I think that our schools don't know what they don't know, but they can no longer hide their heads in the sand because Gen Z is not having it. Right? I'm thinking about, you know, I mean, I'm looking at Joanne and Malay on here right now, and it's like, they're shaking tables, right? Mm-hmm. Like, burn this shit down, right? Like, you're going to these schools, you're wanting to be heard, you're wanting to be affirmed, and you're no longer going to be told no, or I need to be fixed by people that look just like you. This is my HBCU. And I think that's powerful. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. And I'm cheering them all on.
All right, so now that we sort of had a chance to sort of look back and also through the lens of a more academic and research approach, I think it's a good time to pivot and talk about looking forward and talk to our queer youth that we have as guests on the show today. But first, we want to start with the question of what you're curious about. Joanne, let's start with you.
What I'm curious about is how, specifically with HBCUs, like what HBCU royalty is going to look like in 10 years. Because I see where it's going now, but I also see where it was when I was in school, and it's two totally different things, and it was like 3 years ago. So I'm really curious to see like how much it will change and continue to grow throughout these next few years.
Cool. And Malay, what about you? What are you curious about?
He stole my question, but we're going to let him have it.
It's that friendly competition.
No. Honestly, I was really going to say, being in Roy Court ever since my freshman year, I really want to see where it could go, but I'm going to change it. I definitely am curious to know, how do other trans-identifying personnel or people maneuver into the college atmosphere with that confidence and really take on the responsibilities of being a leader at an HBCU? What does that look like down the road? Because I know with me, I didn't start off as openly trans at my HBCU. So I wonder if the image that I leave behind will impact, you know, everybody else that come after me. So yeah.
Yes, I love that. And laying down the groundwork and the foundation for a legacy of what's to come and who's to come after. And Janelle, let us know what you're curious about.
I'm really curious about my purpose in the current moment. So in the present, in the right now, am I doing ultimately what's going to get me there? But also I'm curious about, you know, people that is around me and, what are they doing, you know, to get them to where they are right now? And what's their purpose and things of that nature? So I'm just wondering, you know, what am I doing everything right now that's going to serve me a benefit in the future to what's to come? So, yeah, that's what I'm curious about. Other people as well, you know, what are they doing? What are their thoughts every day? You know, how are they trying to better benefit themselves and things of that nature? Or better in itself, the world. You know, we're living in troubled times right now. And I feel like people really need to kind of redirect their thinking of how can I do something or a little bit today that will benefit tomorrow?
Okay, so this first question, I'm going to go back to you, Juwan. And as the first openly gay Mr. HBCU, what impact do you hope that this has as we look forward to how queer life on HBCU campuses continues to evolve?
I love that question because honestly, as the first openly queer Mr. HBCU, I will always bring light to the fact that I got in drag while I was in my position. So it was like a fashion show that we had, and I completely like shaved my face off. I had a ponytail, skirt, whole nine yards. I did that intentionally because I knew that that was kind of the moment for me to do that, and I could take the back end on what I knew that would do and the next person who came behind me who wanted to be fully authentic in themselves, who would be non-binary or, you know, would be in a certain position to be able to, you know, fully be authentic in who they are and not have to deal with, like, we didn't see that before. And so, you know, moving forward, I really hope that that kind of has led light. And even with specifically my organization that I was a part of, I know if something like that comes up, they know how to deal with it and navigate it because they had to work through that aspect with me. And so that's something that I intentionally wanted to do and that I always bring light to, because it leads so much, you know, it's bigger than me, right? It was a moment that precedes more moments. Mm-hmm. And that is how, you know, we move forward as a community.
I love how intentional you were about just thinking about what it means for someone else that is, you know, looking to be seen, because that's really important, and using your status, to do that work. I think that's really powerful. Now, Malay, you kind of started to talk about this a little bit, but we know that the trans community is often overlooked and underserved. And that holds true through the queer HBCU experience. So as someone who has transitioned in college, can you share with us your experience about representing this community at an HBCU and also how people responded to your own evolution?
Wow. What a great question. I can honestly say that at my HBCU, I start off as an openly gay male at my HBCU, and I was doing everything, you guys. I was modeling in Royal Vanity modeling troupe. I was doing everything, hosting parties, doing it all as Manny, as Emmanuel, you know? And it's like, I always had that push from my class, my staff, my, you know, but I didn't have that push from home. I didn't have that. So I really had to get into a mindset of, I have to do what's best for me. I have to live for me. I can't live for everybody else. So I had to really take keen to just my personal self. I had to really just get into tune what Malay really wanted, not what anybody else wanted. And I knew that I want to actually see change on my campus. My campus was, I go to an HBCU that's, you know, private, it's small. It's not a lot of open mind all the time, coming from a lot of staff. So I was the person to shed light on it all. I don't care. Let's have these conversations. I'm going to be the one that changes it up. I'm going to stir the pot because it's not giving. And so I had to be the one. I feel like I had to be the one to show what the culture is about. And so I had one Mr. Freshman, Mr. Sophomore, and it was just like, everybody was like, well, you're wearing makeup, you're on the royal court, but you're a guy. Yes, I'm all that. Mm-hmm, sure. But on the inside, I was just like, really? I always embrace the queens. And I was like, ah, oh, that is me, y'all. This Mr. He cute, but I won't make it. But honestly, I can't say that. To really shed light on my community, I just know that it's harder just because it's so-called not the norm, but we are people, we are human. We trans women, we are here. We're not going nowhere. And all I can say is for the future transgender queens out there, embrace your inner beauty, embrace who you are. Don't live for nobody else but you. And if they ain't there to support you, It's okay. Cause I had a lot of that. I had a lot of people that walked out, but that was just a blessing in disguise. Cause I had something greater. I had a purpose. So it's all good. But just be you and focus on your goal. Mm. But yeah,
I love that. That's such a powerful story. And just like staying focused and sort of like running your own race. We've all may have heard that analogy when you're like a horse running a race. You don't look to the left, you don't look to the right. You just keep straight that tunnel vision and focus on the goal. So Janelle, I want to throw it over to you. So from your time as an intern for the Human Rights Campaign. Can you share some of the ways in which the organization partners with HBCUs? Because that was the program that you were directly working with in their HBCU program. So let us know how the Human Rights Campaign partnered with HBCUs to serve the queer community. And also let us know if there is anything that you felt was lacking that you'd like to see more of.
Yeah, so when I got on the internship with that Human Rights Campaign, I thought it was great because honestly, even though HBCUs are minority serving institutions, there is still a lot that can be done within the community for us to broaden our knowledge about things and how we can ultimately be inclusive of everyone. You know, not just Black people as, you know, just Black people, but there's a whole spectrum of Black people or just minorities in general. So they actually do HBCU Out Loud Day. And that was when I hosted one of the events on campus of Florida A&M. And my event was called Masculine Identity. So my pronouns are she, hers, but I am mass presenting. So I, you know, enjoy wearing male's clothing and things of that nature. But it was imperative that the campus learn terms, you know, different things that associate with the LGBTQ plus community, just to broaden their knowledge and how they can be inclusive as well as proactive advocates, not just on campus, but, you know, once you leave and you graduate and you get out into the workforce. So they also have the HBCU Regional Leadership Summit as well. Mm-hmm. And with that, they just encourage students to come and how they can be proactive on their campuses and empower LGBTQ plus students as well. So I noticed a lack on my campus as far as students having like a safe space, you know, different resources or just the knowledge of itself. And I wanted mm-hmm. to take that initiative to, you know, just go ahead and say, hey, you know, the little voice that I do have, get my friends together and let's try and make something happen. And so a lot of great things actually came out through that. And I just will hope that, you know, that FAMU or other HBCUs, they continue to cultivate the spaces for these students so that they can feel, you know, safe on their own campus, you know, especially when you're leaving away from home and you're coming to college, this is your place of home right. for the next 4 years. So you're definitely trying to, you know, learn yourself and grow from those experiences and things of that nature. So it's definitely important that you include all of your students while they're, you know, there for that time.
Okay, so now this is a question that we're gonna pose to the entire group, and we're gonna start back with you, Juwan. So what is your hope for the type of experience that you wish to see for the next generation of Black queer HBCU students?
For them to be able to exist wholly in themselves, I want, you know, it to be not a second thought for a trans woman to be the queen of an HBCU. Right. Mm. She's a Black woman. She embodies a queen. She is a queen. Like, I want to see, you know, I really want to see folks to be able to be in these different positions and not be taboo, you know, and folks to be able to exist and be student leaders and to be able to be taken seriously as student leaders on our different campuses. Because we've always been those leaders, right? It's been in the shadows a little bit. But now openly, authentically, we need to be able to, if you can scream Black Lives Matter, if you're screaming all Black Lives Matter, all HBCUs, you know, we need to be on the same page and in affirming all of those that attend our, you know, attend our institution. So I really hope that for our institutions to move forward, that we have that. Like I said, in the first like 10 years, that's what I really would be curious to and would love to see. Mm.
All right, and Malay, what about you? What do you hope for the experience of those Black queer HBCU students to come?
I wish to see them just take charge of their university. You pay your money. You pay your money to go to an institution.
Hello?
Take all that you can out of it, embrace it, and make it yours. Because that undergraduate time, it flies by. So make those memories last. Don't hide in the shadows. Be you, honey. Because at the end of the day, not everybody's going to like it. I mean, we don't really care. Nobody really gives a F. But do you live? Work. Period.
You know what? You know what? Everything you just said, we echo. And we're big Pose fans over here. So love that reference. But Janelle, what about you? What is your hope for the experience you wish to see for the next generation of Black queer HBCU students?
Yeah, so my hope for them is I just wish for students to be unapologetically expressive within themselves and have available resources to them, as well as faculty and staff, of course, you know, spearheading a lot of these things and take an initiative to show students that they are, you know, inclusive and things of that nature. That's my only wish for the future of the students and the campus in general, is that they have the resources available, people are acknowledged, and those students are able to, you know, feel safe on campus and things of that nature. And that's everyone down the spectrum, because, you know, there's a long list of people that you can go through, but making sure that everyone is safe. So that's all I wish for them. Yeah.
All right. So as we promised in the beginning, before we wrap today, you know, we really want to thank you all for your time. On behalf of myself, Jordan, and Damon, like, this means a lot to us. Our HBCU experience was like no other. and we often hear from people how much they wish they had gone to an HBCU, because they see such camaraderie. They see the relationships. Like we started saying, we've known each other, well, for 15 years. You know, that's like insane.
Yeah.
But we want to give each of you the opportunity to let people know, like, where can they find you? What's your social media if you want to share that? Or just anything that you want to plug right now. This is your opportunity. Let's start with you, Kirsten.
Okay, I'm on Facebook, Kirsten Bird, Instagram, the same. I guess those are the best ways, email and Instagram, Facebook, kirstenbird@yahoo.com.
Okay, cool. And Steve?
I am on Facebook, Steve D. Mobley Jr. I am on Twitter at Dr. S. D. Mobley Jr., I believe. I'm on Instagram, but that's private, at the Spill Top. Yes. And I think that's everything. Okay. Or go to UA's website and you can find me there.
Cool. Jawan, where can the people find you?
Yeah, so my Facebook is for family and ballroom. So if you're interested in ballroom, the collection of my stuff is really centralized on Facebook, because that's where folks communicate within the scene. But I'm also on Instagram at Prince Juwan. My Twitter is locked right now, because yeah, I need to decompress in private. I'm on there as well.
All right, and Malay, where can people find you? If you want people to find you.
You guys can find me on Instagram at slo.mojo. I created that account a long time ago. I just never changed the name, but you'll see Malay Simmons pop up. Or you can go to Facebook as well and search up Malay, M-A-L-A-Y Simmons. And you should find me. Yes.
All right. And Janelle, last but not least, let us know where we can find you.
Yeah, so you all can follow me on Instagram. It's janelle.8, and that's janelle.8. I also, this is aside from what we're talking about today, but I am a major sneakerhead. So if you do love sneakers or anything like that, you can follow my my Instagram is kickit.gov. So it's kickit.g, but the O is going to be a zero. V, of course, and I have sneaker infographics on there, sneaker reviews and all that good stuff. That's my business, Presidential Kicks.
All right, well, that's all the time we have this week. This season of Surface Level is produced in partnership with MOBI, Mobilizing Our Brothers Initiative. If you enjoyed this episode, please let's keep the conversation going. We see y'all in the comments. And let us know your thoughts and questions at surfacelevelpodcast.com. And remember, stay curious.